Hello, you're listening to WGXC Accra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM.
Wave Farms WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have one and don't need it, and it's a Macintosh 2019 or newer, please email info@WGXC.org for more information. Thank you for your contribution.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Crisafulli Brothers Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, Upstate New York's home services company since 1993, Red Carpet Service and Solutions. For more information, visit CRISBRO.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Tim Light of Tillsland, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Good news, good planet, good news. It's time now for your good news for a good planet. Nature's legal rights. In early 2021, a building boom in Florida's Orange County threatened to destroy over 2,000 acres of wetlands. Five bodies of water joined forces to sue the state of Florida to protect their right to exist, arguing that nature has legal rights too. The lawsuit was actually filed by human Chuck O'Neill, chairman of the Florida Rights of Nature Network, seeking to expand the legal definition of personhood. Over the past few centuries, personhood has been extended to slaves, women, children, and corporations. So why not nature? The idea caught on with local voters who overwhelmingly approved a charter amendment granting waterways the right to exist, to flow, and be a healthy ecosystem, and to be protected against pollution. The Rights of Nature is a movement that promotes the recognition and honoring that nature does have rights. As climate change threatens life on Earth as we know it, similar legal battles are being waged across the United States and the world. Because it turns out that what is good for other species is also good for humans. We are all from this Earth and very much connected to all the living things. To live in harmony with nature is to live in harmony with ourselves. And this is Mandy from GoodNewsGoodPlanet.com.
Good news, good planet, good news.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Democracy reform-related citizen ballot initiatives failed November 5th as high turnout of GOP voters and deceptive messaging overwhelmed a citizen-led redistricting commission, open primaries, and ranked choice voting. Ohio's Issue 1 citizen-led redistricting commission could not overcome high turnout and a deceptive rewriting of the issue's ballot description by Ohio's Secretary of State and Ballot Board. That effort portrayed the reform itself as gerrymandering in an effort to confuse voters, and it failed 46-54%. The measure proposed a 15-member cross-partisan independent commission without politicians or lobbyists in an effort to create fair maps. As part of a two-vote constitutional amendment process, Nevada voters considered Question 3, establishing a top-five open primary and ranked-choice voting system. The second vote failed 45.5-54.5% after passing it 2 years ago. Colorado's open primary initiative, Proposition 131, received only 44% approval after being opposed by both the Democratic and Republican parties. As of early November 6th, votes supporting Alaska's ballot measure 2 to repeal its top four open primary and ranked choice voting system had edged ahead, with 100,000 votes remaining to be counted. We'll update that result in a future report. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. In Tucson, Arizona, teens are getting paid to plant trees that will provide cooling shade as the climate warms.
We all know how it feels being in the 110 degree heat, walking down the street in Tucson without any shade. Like, that is a universal experience for the community members here.
Angel Enriquez Bro is with the nonprofit Tucson Clean and Beautiful. He says Tucson is working to expand its tree canopy, and his group is getting young people involved in the effort.
Who are better representatives and stewards for the urban forest than the individuals growing up with it?
Each year, the Youth Tree Leaders Program hires up to about 50 teenagers. They learn about planting and caring for drought-tolerant trees and participate in planting events alongside arborists and volunteers. Bro says the experience helps foster a larger sense of stewardship.
When we have young people that have gone through a process of planting, getting to know, identify these trees, and watching them mature and care for them, you know, that's really how we connect young people to place.
So the program helps teens feel rooted in their communities and invested in a greener future. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day workers in Windsor, Ontario, walked off the job in a general strike to support strikers at Ford Motor Company. 20,000 CIO workers brought the city's industrial production to a complete standstill. 11,000 members of UAW Local 200 had been on strike against Ford since September 12th. They demanded a union shop and dues checkoff. As the strike wore on, picket lines swelled every day with as many as 1 to 2,000 amassing at the gates to stop scabs. Then, on this day, more than 9,000 additional members of Amalgamated UAW Local 195, working at 27 area plants, joined them in support. Thousands of picketers set up a blockade at Ford's Riverfront plant that tied up the city's transit system. Sandwich Street was choked with cars, buses, and trucks. More than 1,000 cars were bumper to bumper in an endless traffic jam as strikers worked to prevent a police attack on the picket lines. The two-mile blockade and general strike were in effect for 2 days until the government threatened to send in federal troops to aid provincial and Canadian police. Thousands continued to picket. By November 12th, AFL and CIO leaders throughout Canada were calling for a work holiday to show support. Then, on December 19th, workers agreed to binding arbitration. Supreme Court Justice Ivan Rand was assigned the case. He ruled against the closed shop, but for dues checkoff. He put forth a series of rules and penalties regarding labor disputes that would come to be known as the Rand Formula. It has served as the basis for labor relations and collective bargaining in Canada ever since.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Walls don't mean a thing. I'm in Neverland. I'm in Neverland.
And I can climb into your pocket. See that there is nothing wrong or right.
Hey, this is Rob Lumberg from Uncontaminated Sounds. If those of you whom are unfamiliar, I started Uncontaminated Sound by my artistic creativity or curiosity. I initially started my career as a photographer, filmmaker, with my innovative and versatile documentaries covering music, comedy, art, and film. After spending my youth in Massachusetts, I moved to New York where I could be more actively pursue a full-time career in art and film. In 2019, after covering musicians with my lens, I was curious to go to a deeper level in understanding why artisans pursued the craft. So I picked up a little handy cam and had my first interview in person with a comedian in the Lower East Side. 4 interviews later, going into 2020, the pandemic hit, and I went to Zoom, respectively reaching out to 700,000 viewers via Zoom and distributing the conversation series on YouTube. And now I'm hitting the airwaves. I'm experimenting with live conversations, and I would like to introduce my first guest, Gail Ann Dorsey, whom most may know is a musician best known as a bassist, session musician, and vocalist. She has regularly performed with David Bowie from 1995 through his last tour in 2004. She was part of Bowie's last 6 tours and performed with him at the Concert for New York at Madison Square Garden. In 2017, she joined the Celebrating David Bowie tour. Through her big break early on came with Charlie Watts' big band and an appearance on The Tube, a music television show hosted by Jules, pronounced Jules. Holland and Paula Yates. From 1993 to 1996, Dorsey recorded and toured with Tears of Fears, contributing to their songwriting and appearing in several of their music videos. Her versatile career has also led to collaborations with The National, Lenny Kravitz, Brian Ferry, Boy George, The Indigo Girls, Khalid, Jane Sidbury, The Skin, Gwen Stefani, Charlie Watts, Seal, Gang of Four, Susan Warner, Annie DeFranco, Dart Williams, to name a few. Dorsey has released 3 solo albums, The Corporate World, Rude Blue, and I Used to Be. Her style blends rock, funk, country, pop influence, and pop influences. Her sound is modern, is a modern take on AM/FM radio tunes influenced by the Fifth Dimension, Olivia Newton-John, Bread and Heart. So please welcome Gail Ann Dorsey.
Hello, Robert. You Hello. Did very well.
And folks listening, I was a bit nervous live on air. It's, it was definitely a bit scripted, their introduction, but welcome and thank you for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me. You did very well. This is your first day on radio, right?
Yes, this is the first day on radio.
So it's quite understandable. You did a great job. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
Thank you so much again. And how are you feeling today?
Oh, my goodness. I have so many emotions today. I don't know where to begin. But, I'm happy. I'm optimistic. I'm okay. I'm healthy, as far as I know. That's always a good start for the day. And being here on radio, I'm always feeling inspired. I love the radio. I was a child of radio. My mother always had the radio on when I was growing up, and I think it was just, you know, like a lot of people say, radio was our best friend back in the day. You know, kind of the transistor under the pillow kind of thing. But so I've always been a big fan of radio, and so when I'm invited to speak on the radio and to you know, reach a radio audience, which is always exciting to me, it makes me in a good mood. So I'm feeling good today, and thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I've always found the power of conversation, and particularly conversations regarding art and culture, mm-hmm. so healing for myself, particularly post-pandemic or during the pandemic days, and this is how I've grown my conversation series and my passion to discuss said topics. Hopefully this spreads throughout wherever the listener base
I mean, that's the beauty of radio. You never know who's listening, really, but it's like it's nice to kind of imagine that world out there and to feel that you can somehow connect with people. And it doesn't have to be, you know, sort of a FaceTime thing or whatever. There's something that's endearing, I think, about getting to know people by what they're speaking about, not necessarily what they write or what, like, I don't know, just hearing the voice and trying to connect to the sort of deeper truth of a person by the way they speak.
And before we get too deep into the ethos of culture and craft making and your prolific journey into pursuing your craft to the fullest extent, mm-hmm. that track we opened up the conversation with was entitled what?
It's called Netherland. Mm. It's the very first track on the last CD that I it was an independent self-released CD that I did. The first two CDs I did that you mentioned were on major labels starting way back in the 80s. That song, Netherland, is kind of a song about a safe space, you know, which is, I thought was a good kind of song to open up with today. Feeling that about a space where there are no walls, where there's, you know, a good feeling. And we know our direction and we know comforted by it, whatever that space can be for people. Mm-hmm. So it's called Netherland. I'm working on a new CD now. It's been 20 years, I think, since that one was released. And as you mentioned, a bunch of people that I've worked with, they've all kept me very busy for the last 20 years. But I something that happened with me for the pandemic is that I decided, you know, there was this kind of downtime. There was no more touring. I had been working that for 10 years with Lenny Kravitz in the Lenny Kravitz Band, which was a wonderful experience. And but things for everything slowed down for live work, and it was just a time for me to reflect on, okay, where do I really want to go now musically? It's been a long time since I focused on myself. And that's another reason I'm grateful to be invited to speak about the fact that I am now focusing pretty much 100% on my own solo career for the first time in about 20 years.
Wow.
So, and it's a little daunting, but it's also feels very good. And the more that I kind of start to look at what I want to have to, what I have to say or what I feel I would like to express musically again, the better it feels, the stronger I feel about it. So, I'm working on a new project right now, so I'm hoping to get some new music released very, very soon. I have a new track that you can play later if you like today.
Great.
Too.
Yeah, we'll see if I can operate the mixer correctly, but
we'll figure it out together. I'm a bit of a tech head.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing too regarding the pandemic and in having that introspection.
Yeah.
For most artisans I've spoken to on the series.
Yeah. I think it was a good thing. Not even just for artists, but just for people to slow down for a freaking minute.
No, exactly. I agree. Myself, I also am an avid painter and a visual artist, which I dove really deep into pandemic times, and also my writing. I love to write and visual arts. And so, having that period of introspection, and then also that the pause and reflecting on our society as humans, right? And
yes,
the global society.
Yes, that too, very much so. Our mortality, all of
precisely.
Up in the air at that point.
if you can touch upon that briefly, how was that experience for yourself? With the prolific career touring and recording and performing with other artisans, what was it like to be physically locked, forced to be locked in with yourself, I guess?
Well, in some ways it was good. I feel like that it allowed me that time to think, to feel creative on my own terms instead of really, and this is not something that I regret or dislike doing. In fact, I love it so much. That's why I've done it my whole life, is trying to inject my creative ideas, juices, powers, forces, whatever, into other people's music to serve the music. Mm. To me, as a musician, it's always been about serving the song, serving the music. It's taking myself out of the equation in terms of my own ego musically. Mm. I've never been that kind of a musician. I maybe sometimes I should have been, but I wasn't. So it was nice to kind of go, oh, I have time to, you know, for example, I did a course, online music course, something that I wouldn't have had time to do while I was on the road. With Berklee School of Music in Boston, they do these online, 12-week online courses. I had done a few of them when I was on the road, because it's something that when you're touring, you know, you can kind of do in your hotel room and take lessons every week. And it's kind of fun. I was taking guitar courses because I never studied music. I still can't read music and all of that. But it was just nice to go back and try and learn a little bit about what I've already been doing all these years. Yeah. But I did take a course in Logic, the recording software,
because
that's what I use at home, and I was able to, and still able to do e-sessions, as we call them. I do bass tracks and vocal tracks for people all over the world, but I was able to learn how to use it better. I took a 12-week course, and I was home, and it was very inspiring, because I made a step, you know, towards being able to do something technically that I was kind of just never had the time to focus on. So then it made me do even more creative things. Like I started a Patreon page, which it has, the last few years it's been kind of quiet and dormant. It's not disappeared, but it's not active because I have been busy, but I'm about to start it up again because I'm now eliminating most things from my agenda and trying to make it about my music and my art and how I can survive doing that. But through Patreon, I also then started to, with my new Logic knowledge, I was able to make these really cool recordings. I was offering people a cover tune. Once a month, I would record a cover tune that the people who were my Patreons on Patreon would, you know, suggest an artist, or they suggest a song, and I go, oh, okay, let me see if I can do my version of that. So, you know, a lot of good, like, just fun, creative things, stuff that didn't have a huge pressure on it, or there was not a huge judgment, or there was not no expectation. And it was really nice to just get in touch with that. Like you said, for you, it's painting and writing and drawing. And for me, it was like, oh, yeah, let's just do some music for fun.
Yeah.
You know, and it only helps you grow, you know, just, and it helped me a lot to just kind of get better at a few things.
Isn't it so freeing just to not have judgment in your creation process?
Yes, and it's hard, and I'm my own worst judge.
Yes.
That's the problem. It's like other people are, you know, very rarely give me a hard time, as much of a hard time as I give myself. But yes, judgment is never our friend.
Well, I know it well myself, so it's maybe it's an artist thing.
I think it's an artist thing. For sure, it's an artist thing, and it's just a human thing too.
Yeah,
we tend to kind of have an opinion about things for whatever reason, our own insecurities, our own whatever, you know.
So, Gail, we could have a full conversation on your background and your history of performances, but how did you – I would like to flash back to just the beginning and, like, what really drove you to music and how did you get on this amazing journey?
You know, there was something about music when I was younger, and I'm thinking about it today because it's a little bit of a crazy time in the country with the end of the elections and all of that, and – you know, no matter what side you're on, whatever, but it's music. It was something for me when I was younger that it seemed to be my savior. When I heard music, it was something that was a language that I could understand, because to me it spoke to me emotionally. Even as a little kid who doesn't know how to display or explain my emotions with words when you're 3 years old or 5 years old. But music somehow just got right in there. And I had this feeling that I knew I had to learn how to speak that language. Otherwise, I don't know how I could kind of exist in the world, because I wouldn't be able to, I don't know, express myself in some way. I needed to be able to learn that language. And so I just knew from a very, very young age I wanted a guitar for a start, because I loved hearing guitar players like Terry Kath from Chicago, the band Chicago. I just found out how old you are, so there's some things you might not know. When you were mentioning the Fifth Dimension, I was like, he's not going to know who the hell that is. And Eric Clapton. I mean, all the guitar greats, you know. Mark Farner from Grand Funk Railroad, I absolutely adored his guitar playing. But that somehow that instrument really spoke to me, and I begged for one. I wanted one. I was 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old, 9 years old. I finally get a guitar for my birthday. And I taught myself to play it, because I grew up in a, you know, not for wanting anything, never gone hungry or without a roof over my head. I had everything I needed growing up, but we didn't have extra. I grew up in West Philadelphia, in a classic West Philly row house. Father passed away when I was six. Mom never remarried, just the two of us trying to get by, you know, Social Security. I didn't have money for lessons. We had lessons in school. I actually studied clarinet in school, believe it or not, and I still play a little bit. I'm thinking of trying to kind of get that back into my repertoire. But I just wanted to, I had to play the guitar. So I just taught myself. And the great thing was that music in those days was everywhere in the neighborhood. We weren't on our phones. We didn't have the distraction of screens. We didn't have any of those things. We just had ourselves and our imagination and whatever instruments we could either make for ourselves or steal or put together or borrow or buy or whatever we had to do to make music, you know, from bongos to harmonicas to guitars to shakers. You know, we'd go to the park and we'd play music. This was a way of life as in my youth. So that's kind of how it started. And then, and I just persevered from then, because I just knew I kind of had a gift for it. I had a talent for it. Somehow I could figure things out. And I just got better and various circumstances eventually led me to the bass guitar, which is a whole other avenue, but was the best decision I ever made in my life in terms of playing an instrument. And I love the bass guitar now. Guitar will always be my favorite, my first love, but the bass guitar is, to me, the most awesome instrument, or the bass in general. It doesn't have to be the guitar. It's just an incredible, powerful, emotional, emotive, beautiful. It's melodic, it's rhythmic, it's a beautiful instrument, and I'm so grateful that it found me.
And did you go to school for music or art?
I did not. I went to school for filmmaking. I went to California Institute of the Arts, CalArts, out in Valencia, California. I did like 3 semesters, and I had a full scholarship because I had done a bunch of Super 8 films as a teenager when I was in high school, and they got me a full scholarship to film school. And I was really gung-ho. I was going to be a director. I wanted to be a screenwriter particularly. And I got there at 17 years old, first, the only female in my freshman class. This is 1980.
Wow.
This would not be today, I'm sure, in film school. It's probably full of women and brilliant ones at that, no doubt. But I was the lone little person there who had to deal with a room full of men.
Yes, yeah.
who wanted to be filmmakers, no less. Not even just normal men, but men who were in the film industry, which was like you talk about breaking through a wall. Forget it. I didn't stand a chance.
Yeah.
And I realized I didn't have the temperament for that industry.
Mm.
I really loved Hollywood. I loved films. I still love cinema. I go all the time. I'm a SAG member. I look at films. I vote. I just love it. But it's not an industry that I'm not strong enough. I knew that. So I dropped out and went back to music because even though I think I faced, well, actually, I didn't really face a lot of sort of sexism or difficult things in my career. I don't know why that was, but I feel very fortunate that I didn't really have a lot of incidents with that, maybe one or two in 30 years, so that's not bad.
Yeah.
But I always felt welcomed in the music community, male, female, didn't matter. It was just a much more loving kind of environment to get together and make music with people than to try and get a film made for 10 years.
Yeah.
With banks and lawyers and egos and Lord, money.
So it was more just intrinsically right for yourself to transition to back to music.
Well, yeah.
Which was always a part of you.
It was in
my
blood. I remember going to college and I sold my first bass, which I still regret to this day. Or maybe I even gave it to somebody. I don't even remember. I went without a guitar. I had nothing. And like the first couple of months at school, I remember I was like, I'm jonesing for a guitar. And I went to the Saugus swap meet, I think it was a little town near Valencia, where they had a swap meet on a Saturday, and I bought like a $30 little Mexican guitar from the market just to have something. And that was already the beginning of like, okay, I'm playing. I was even though I was in film school, I was starting to play the guitar again every day.
Yeah.
And write songs.
So I guess from there, how do you link up with Bowie and get on to your path of
there's a lot of steps along the way.
Yes, of course.
But I think the most important step that I made was unfortunately that I really had no choice was to leave the United States, and my career began in the United Kingdom in London. I had an opportunity to go to London. I was 19 or 20 at the time. And I just thought, why not? I had nothing to lose. I went with, £50 in my pocket and, some friends and stayed at a friend's house. And I had one little bass and a few demos that I was trying to get a record deal. But I had no luck in New York City. My music was not urban enough. I was black, but then they were like, but it's not black music. It's not what black artists are doing, but I never knew how to fit in that particular thing. It's not that I don't like R&B or I don't like, rhythm and blues or what you call black music or urban music. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. It's ridiculous, but it's just music. But I just didn't, I was influenced by so many different things, from rock to, from Tina Turner to Karen Carpenter to, the Partridge Family. I mean, it's like all of those things are valid and wonderful pieces of music to me. They're all great. So why can't we just, you know, when I want to write something, I infuse all of those things that inspire me. So it was very hard for me to be pigeonholed in the United States, which was a very pigeonholed kind of place in terms of record labels in the 80s, in the early 80s. But when I went to the UK, it was much more open. It was more about the music. It didn't matter if you were a black person or you were Jamaican or you were American or you were Spanish or whatever. If the song itself was a hit, it was a hit. It didn't matter. Yeah. It was like, well, we just like that song, you know. Yes, there were definitely issues I faced once I had record deals in the UK because, you know, that was the nature of the industry at the time. You have a hit, you have a single, and then you got to have another single, and where's the single, and, you know, and then you make the video and all these things. But there was still a much more broader sense of music in the UK and in Europe, and it's still that way to this day. Mm. I still work there a lot. For most of the pandemic, I spent in Paris, and I was working with French artists there and living in Paris for like about 2.5 years. Wow. And you just can't even believe the kind of mixture of music that you find in Paris, you know, in terms of from opera to, you know, oh my gosh, I don't even know how to describe it. But there's such a mixture of things that the culture appreciates. And so you don't feel so limited. So that was the best thing I did was to leave the U.S. at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
And got going in the UK, and eventually, I know the time is going running, but yeah. Eventually, like, just one job kind of led to another. I mean, I pay my dues. I played in the pubs, and I did busking like Ed Sheeran does or whatever under Waterloo Bridge, and I played in the Pizza Express restaurants. I did it all.
Yeah, yeah.
And then eventually, you know, it's kind of just meeting people, and one thing led to another. And if people, something I try and tell younger artists who ask me for some kind of advice, it's like, you can be really, really good at your instrument and what you play and how you play. You can be so incredible. But if your personality stinks, you're not going to work. Mm. And that's just the bottom line. People will want to be around you, you want people to feel good around you. And I think I've always had I'm just an easygoing person. Mm. I just always have been. And I don't make waves unless they need to be made, and you have to really push me to a limit to get to that point. But it's like, we're here to make music and we're here to play, and it's like, you know, there's no, leave all the bullshit, excuse my French, but leave it at the door, you know. It's not necessary. So be careful about your whims of your own maybe assessment of yourself and your value. Your value is to serve the song, is to serve the music, and be a decent person, you know, someone that people enjoy being around, you know. So
of course, yeah.
So no, I think that, like, works.
Energy attracts other energy,
absolutely.
And if it's positive, if you're radiating creativity and positivity, mm-hmm. other beings in the same wavelength will be attracted to your work and your person. So I assume that may have happened with David.
Exactly what happened with Bowie. And I think that has actually been, I think that's one of his strong points that I learned working with him over the years, is how he was able to see in a person, not only certainly see their creative potential, maybe even more than the musician or artist or whoever person he's working with, even more than they could see it. Mm. He had a gift for that. And I feel like it was like such an incredible, I was so lucky to have a mentor like that who believed in what I could do and allowed me to experiment and push myself. He'd push you a little bit and you think, maybe I can't do that, or like, this song is really complicated, or what? I don't know. But then it's like, you go for it, and you know, he's there smiling when you've come over the finish line. It was he was very great at that. And, you know, and he apparently he saw me on a television show talk about seeing someone reading them, I guess, in some way, when I was promoting my first album, The Corporate World.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on some television show in London, and apparently he said to me, he was in a hotel, and he saw me sing a song from the album, and then he went and he made a mental note that when the time was right, when he was doing the right project, he would love to work with me at one point.
Hmm.
I have no idea what I said on that interview. I don't know what song I played. I don't know which show he was referring to, because there were many things at that time. But I obviously made an impression that he remembered. This would have been in the late 80s. He didn't call me until 95. So
wow.
But that was his process. But his memory was extraordinary.
Yeah,
and I saw it on many levels.
The universe, again, or just the whatever one would want to call it, it's destiny or universal energy coming back.
Absolutely.
Maybe in the 80s it wasn't your time, but in five, six years down the road, it was.
Absolutely.
Obviously.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And just before him, I was working with Tears for Fears, which was another incredible, there's a few milestones I feel in my career that really pushed me to where I could see myself go from one level to the next level.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have been anywhere close to being ready to work with Bowie if I hadn't had the extraordinary experience of being in the Tears for Fears band with Roland Orzabal. He was a totally different kind of an artist than Bowie, but also incredibly brilliant, and really had a lot of, really had my back, and I appreciate that. You know, I owe him so much. I owe David so much. I have, all of the artists I've worked with, I really I have huge respect, and I have humble gratitude that I had any experience of working with them.
Yeah.
All the people you listed on that list.
No, it's just amazing career. No,
it freaks me out when I think about it now. I'm not one of those people who's shy about my age or whatever. In a couple of weeks, I'll be 62 years old.
Wow.
And I just feel like, wow, I don't know how I managed to do so much great stuff between, that 9-year-old birthday gift of that first guitar from my godmother to now. And it's just, I'm just so, so grateful, that times have been up, times have been down. Mm. It's a crazy business.
Yeah.
As you know, any kind of art is not always, the easiest path to take in this world, but it is without a doubt the most rewarding.
Yeah.
And so I'm just, if I don't ever get to play with anybody great again, I'm good.
Yeah.
Put it that way. I'm good. I'm like, I have no complaints. I'm happy to hand over the torch. There's so many great new young players out there that I'm seeing, which is really exciting, especially women. Oh, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're killing it.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to see that. I had Heart were my role models then. Anna and Nancy Wilson from Heart, when they came out, there were two women who were fronting the band. It was their band. It wasn't the guys. It was the sisters. So to this day, I owe to them. I never got to play with them, but I did get to meet them and tell them how much they meant to me, having the courage to keep going.
Yeah.
Now when I see so many women in everybody's band, it's just very, very exciting. And I hope that I had something to do with that.
Or
I like to think that I helped inspire somebody else to another female to pick up an instrument and say, I can do this.
I think on that note, I think we wanted to try to get one more song in.
Yes.
I have already lined up.
It's one of my new ones. It's not... you can play that one if you like.
Well, I think I've selected...
Maybelline.
Yes, yes.
That's actually a very good
one.
Fine? This is going to be on my next release. It's called Maybelline.
Oh, perfect. Is it coming through? There we go.
You got it, Robert.
When a storm is moving in from all directions, a tree will only bend until it breaks. Mother Nature making chaos of perfection, scary sight not everyone can take. Maybelline, you remind me of a flower, too delicate for words to describe. Maybelline, you've got to look over your shoulder, just because there are people who don't understand. We're all flesh and blood, each like the other. Every boy and girl, every woman and man. Maybelline, how I hope you will feel better. Hope you can forgive the world for being so cruel. Now you're free to walk in the garden of your dreams. Maybelline, may you find your self-esteem. A heart is meant to feel but not be broken. And in the face of pain, it must be brave. A mind can drive you crazy if not spoken. Your silence, too high a price to pay. Maybelline, when the minutes seemed like hours, just how hard you tried. How I wish you knew you always held the power. An army of compassion on your side. Maybelline, you've got to look over your shoulder, just because there are people who don't understand. We're all flesh and blood, each like the other. Every boy and girl, every woman and man. Maybelline, how I hope you will feel better. Hope you can forgive this world for being so cruel. Now you're free to walk in the garden of your dreams. Maybelline, sweet Maybelline.
That was beautiful.
Thank you very much.
And that was self-recorded?
That was recorded. The piano was done by a great French piano player. It was done in Paris. His name is Michel Anselm. The string arrangement orchestration was by Jamshid Sharifi, who's an incredible composer down in New York City. I wrote the song. I did the vocal. And I don't remember all the... all the players' names in the section, because they were also, it was also done in Paris. But it's weird. This is a song that's about it's about suicide, and it's kind of, I was tearing up a little bit because actually a friend of mine I spoke to just on Saturday just lost his brother and his brother's wife to that very sad affliction. And it seems to be something that's happening a lot. And it was, and I, the song was inspired by not only my own personal experiences of losing a few friends and even a family member through suicide, but also I was asked to be a part of a a concert in New Paltz, New York, that was a foundation called the Maya Gold Foundation, which was about a foundation by the parents of a girl named Maya who had committed suicide. She was young. She was a teenager, maybe.
Wow. Yeah.
And she was... So I said, yes, I would be a part of it. And I didn't know what song I wanted to sing. You know, everybody was, you know, you sort of pick Imagine by John Lennon, you know, whatever, the usual song for these kind of benefits. And somehow, which usually takes me 1,000 years to write a song, that one came to me very quickly, and it was I wrote it for that event. And it, to this day, it just gets stronger and stronger in terms of, I don't know, I think it was sent to me maybe by, my whole purpose was to write a lullaby to say, it's okay, you know, we understand down here still that it was hard and you had to go.
Yeah, it was so powerful listening to it. For those not in studio, most of you, I was hit with emotion, a deep emotion, because I've lost a lot of friends as well,
yes,
unfortunately, at this
it
stage.
Is, yes.
And it just hit that deep intrinsic chord and soul, and it was just beautiful. You know?
Thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, it's those are those moments, I think, when I can come up with a song like that and I can deliver a song in that way, that I feel that I somehow got out of my way and let it be what it's supposed to be. Because when I feel when songs reach me in that way, I feel like there's no filter. It's coming straight from that strong force of the universe that connects all of us on that deep emotional level,
yeah,
of something. And to me, that's a gift. And I just think, oh, my God, thank you. Thank you for that song. I thank the universe for that song. Not,
yeah.
I don't find that I was particularly clever other than getting out of the freaking way and letting that song come to me. So.
And, you know, and this is a good hours of topic conversation of conceptuality of creativity and that. Ethos mm-hmm. of where it stems from.
Absolutely.
But down to its simplest form, when you have something that just flows through you without that blockage
that's
or overthinking.
Right. That's it.
That's it. Like,
yeah.
You know, you feel that's it
gold.
Through
yeah.
your body, your whole being. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is it. This is, there's no other option. There's
that's right.
no blockage. And,
yeah.
and it comes out. Whatever. Medium one works with as an artist, it comes up.
I agree. You can get it looking at a painting. You can hear it. You can read a poem or one line of a haiku or you name it. See anything, a photograph, a song, a melody, you know, a dance movement. It's all just, you know, it's all there for us. You know, we do have to just get out of our way, our own way. And, you know, I think we're all kind of clogged up now with so much nonsense going on in the world that it's hard for us to find our purest self, to get to that point. And to me, that's the ultimate answer to all of the questions. It comes from us all individually, kind of clearing out all the noise that's in us, from traumas to media to whatever it is, to the cell phone. It doesn't matter. But I think until we get more to that pure sense, it's going to be hard to fix the woes of the world.
I totally agree. I often wonder, like, what if we had periodic just shutdowns like the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
If we shut down every month and everybody just stopped and reflected.
Absolutely. Reflection is important, you know.
Of course.
But we don't get a lot of time to do that. We have emails to answer and text messages.
Exactly.
About them, yeah,
always live. Busy doing really nothing.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's the plan. That's the plan. It's working too well.
Well, I guess an overarching ending question for younger artists and musicians and female musicians and artisans in general, I guess one key advice, a piece of advice that you'd like to close with or any lessons learned during your journey that you'd like to kind of pass along to any listeners that come across this conversation?
I guess just, you know, find the thing, you know, really... don't be afraid of the thing that you love musically. If you decide to be a singer or you want to, you know, there's always some kind of inspiration that we get from something else. And I mean, it's very rare that someone says, I have no role models or there's nothing that inspires me, I'm my own person. That can be true, but there's got to be something that kind of gives you a little, that kind of lights that fire under you. I think just be true to that. And I would have had a better answer to this 20 years ago or 30 years ago when I kind of thought I could understand how the business of music works, but I haven't got a freaking clue at this point.
Yeah.
So it's all like with everything, with all forms of media and everything, it's like it's a free-for-all. So in some ways, try and embrace that, I guess, would be my thing, and embrace the freedom in it to allow yourself to really express yourself as yourself, because you can make your own world now. You don't always have to go through another huge system in order to be validated or to reach a big audience or things like that. So I guess just be true to what you love doing and don't do it for any other reasons than that it makes you feel wonderful, that you're going for that goal, that moment when you feel like, oh, I just wrote a great song, or I just be there for it. Put yourself there for it. Be present for it as much as you can possibly be. Because if you don't put yourself there, you won't receive it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make yourself available.
I think with our current digital existence, anybody can put anything out there.
Sure.
How important is the live performance as well? These days.
Well, for me, the live performance is everything. It always has been. It's been more of what my career has been based on as well, and what I've enjoyed. I would love to have been a big sort of studio guy, maybe, but I think I prefer the live thing more. I like that feeling of being on stage, because for me, it is the one time, you know. I'm not particularly religious or a particular religion, but I do try an attempt at some form of meditation on a regular basis. But I have not found any other thing that I do that is more the purest of meditation than being on a stage playing a concert. There is nothing else that can enter my mind except the music flowing through my instrument.
Yeah.
I have no thoughts of anything else. Once in a while, something might creep in, but it's very, very rare. And so for me, that's my release.
Yeah.
That's where I get my energy. That's where I can regroup myself. I can feel like a human being again.
Yeah.
And when I'm too long off the stage, I'm not in good shape.
I understand.
So live is the way to go. I think it's the way to go. And I mean, really, like, play with other musicians. That's important. Don't make videos on TikTok of yourself with a computer. Get out there and find somebody else to play your instruments with. That is crucial.
Yeah.
Because that's then if we lose that connection between musicians, we really have gutted the soul of music. We've just torn it apart, and that's sacrilege.
What's funny as well, to add on that, I first came across your live performance in Hudson in 2018 when you collaborated with The National.
Oh, gosh,
and
yeah,
I
that's
actually
right. Yes.
Have some beautiful shots from that show in the
wonderful.
Hudson Hall. And so the circle kind of wraps itself
that was
to
great.
This moment.
Yeah. They talk about great artists who are true to what they do, and they're just so brilliant at it. I love those guys. They're fantastic.
Yeah. I've over the span of my journeys, I've started to become friends with those guys, Ben and Kyle particularly.
Oh, for sure.
Ben Lance and Kyle Resnick.
Kyle's great.
One's listeners don't know the National, but they're amazing brass players for the National, and just the amazing guys. And
they are.
I've had them on the series several times.
And, sweethearts. Yeah.
And I guess where can people find your new stuff, or online or in
digital
world?
It's coming soon. I don't have anything officially released. That was a sort of sneak peek here in Maybelline today. I will be starting my Patreon again, so that's patreon.com, Gail Ann Dorsey, and without an E, GAILANNDORSEY. There's no E on Ann. You can go to GailAnnDorsey.com, and it will lead you to my Facebook and my Instagram and the sort of normal things for now. Once I've got some of my releases in place, I'll be starting to do something on the actual website to kind of get things a bit, you know, get things rolling. So that's where you can find me.
Awesome. And thank you so much for that wonderful conversation. And
my pleasure, Robert. Good luck
being
in your
the inaugural live series.
Right on. Well, good luck in your radio announcing career. I think you're going to do great.
Thank
I'm
you
rooting
so
for
much.
You.
And I think we have it's like 20 seconds, so